environment, the climate of impunity. There's a war in Europe. Turkey's military might be needed. Erdogan could play a role in EU's new defense plans. He has drones. He has troops. The geography is behind him. Netanyahu just broke another ceasefire. He kills and kills. There's no impunity. I mean, there's no impunity. He's not a political pariah. And Trump dismantled America's democracy. He keeps doing that every day. He is mimicking Erdogan's playbook. Like, only the ones that really watched Turkey in the last decade and a half would realize that it took more than a decade to dismantle Turkish institution to capture the state. But, you know, Trump is doing the same. And it is that public now on the streets in Turkey is our only hope.
Turkish political scientist Ezgi Başaran, associate faculty member at Oxford University, speaking to us from there. Her Substack is Angle, Anchor, and Voice. We'll link to the full interview on what's happening in Turkey today at democracynow.org. As we conclude our show, a very happy birthday to Nermeen Sheikh, our dear Democracy Now! Co-host. We miss you, Nermeen. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM in the Portland area and all over the world at kbu.fm.
KBOO's Metal Marathon, the Metal March, is back once again. And that means brand new metal merch. Go to kbu.fm/metal to check out all KBOO's new metal merch, featuring exclusive artwork provided by local tattoo artist and musician at Unicron Artworks. This year's Metal Marathon is live on KBOO, Friday, March 14th at 8 p.m. through Saturday, March 15th at 6 a.m. Get your very own limited edition 2025 Metal March Metal Merch and listen to every installment of the Metal Marathon at kbu.fm/metal and support metal on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
Hey, KBOO listeners, come join us Friday, April 4th from 6 to 9 p.m. here at the station for KBOO's April Fools for Fools First Friday Arts Walk for the eccentrics, the clowns, and the freaks. Enjoy an evening of art, live music, vendors, performers, food, drinks, and more. That's Friday, April 4th from 6 to 9 p.m. at 20 Southeast 8th Ave, Portland, Oregon. Can't wait to see you there.
Support for KBOO comes from KBOO members and Grendel's Coffee Shop, located at East Burnside and 8th Avenue in Portland, featuring coffee, tea, sandwiches, and more. Information at grendelspdx.com.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up in the KBOO Evening News, thunder, lightning, hail, and even a chance of a tornado are forecasted for this evening.
The Portland City Council is set to consider banning the use of algorithms in setting rent prices.
And in national news, experts say importing eggs won't bring the cost down.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, March 26th, 2025. I'm Josh Salem.
And I'm Dave Johnson. A rare severe thunderstorm is expected in northwest Oregon and southwest Washington today. The storms are expected to continue into the night and could include golf ball-sized hail and wind nearing 60 miles per hour, as well as lightning and around half an inch of rain. Severe thunderstorms are rare around here, west of the Cascades, but today's are made possible by the recent unseasonably warm air being met with cool, wet weather coming in from the west. Thunderstorms and few lightning strikes were reported over the Olympic Peninsula this morning. The last time the Pacific Northwest saw significant large hail was August 2014. There's also a 9% chance of a tornado in the Willamette Valley. If locals do encounter a tornado, the Oregon Department of Emergency Management has some recommendations. They say people should take shelter in a basement if they can, and if not, go into the lowest floor of the home in a small interior room away from the windows is best. They recommend covering yourself with a mattress or sturdy object to protect from debris. If folks are outside without shelter during a tornado, they recommend lying in a ditch or culvert and covering your head. Shelter is the best defense against lightning and high winds. The Emergency Management Department says people should be aware of the potential for power outages with falling trees. They say more safety information can be found online at weather.gov/safety/thunderstorms.
The Portland City Council will consider an ordinance to ban the use of algorithms to set rents. Their proposal was passed on to the full council by the Homelessness and Housing Committee on Tuesday. This comes after 10 states, including Oregon, filed an antitrust lawsuit against the company RealPage for using an algorithm to artificially fix the prices of rents not in line with demand. Susie Duster is policy advisor to Portland City Council, Angelita Murillo. Duster told the committee, quote, "Currently, it is the case that landlords for over 32,000 units in Portland are sharing their most sensitive competitor data with each other to set rental prices and agree to move prices in unison," end quote. The economics of supply and demand should mean that when there are more housing units available than there are people to fill them, rental prices should go down. The allegation in the lawsuit and the proposed ordinance is that algorithms prevent rents from being competitive. They are artificially high. That has implications for the affordable housing crisis in Portland, something lawmakers say they're keen to address. But landlord groups like Multifamily Northwest and the Portland Business Alliance have cried out against the measure, saying it's baseless and that they haven't had time to consider it. City Councilor Eric Zimmerman voted against bringing the proposal to the whole council, saying he felt the process was ramrodded through. The next city council meeting is on Wednesday, April 2nd at 9:30 a.m.
The Portland area is going to get a new modern animal shelter, thanks to approval from the Multnomah County Board of Commissioners. Shelter volunteers say they're frustrated and concerned with the current facility's age and size. The county's approval marks a positive improvement in the service to and care of animals in Multnomah County. Board Commissioner Jessica Vega Peterson says, quote, "I take pride in the work Animal Services has done over the past 2 years to rebuild this department, increase staff, reconsider services, and align work with best practices," end quote. The existing facility is undersized at 18,000 square feet. Currently, needs would double the facility to meet national animal care standards. The projected costs run between $55 and $85 million.
Advocates working for patients' rights are sounding the alarms on huge fees, upwards of $30,000, that patients can be forced to pay in order to access their own complete records. KBOO reporter Onyx has more on the story.
Patient right activists are working to restrict huge fees that some Washington patients must pay in order to access complete medical records. Attorney Holly Broccoli says navigating the medical system is complex and often requires support from lawyers and other advocates. But Broccoli says once patients secure an advocate, they can face huge fees for their records. One client was charged $28,000 by health data firm Datavant. Broccoli says these fees can prevent sick or injured patients from quickly getting records they need for legal claims and other urgent matters.
That navigate things like whether a protective order should be issued to someone who has suffered from domestic violence, or whether a breast cancer battler should be able to get FMLA leave.
Legislation to limit fees was introduced in Olympia this session, but did not pass. Advocates plan to reintroduce it next session. While federal law supports patients, Broccoli claims companies like Datavant exploit loopholes and state regulations to impose high fees. Broccoli says Datavant argues that getting complete medical records can be complicated because they have to dig through microfiche. She says this is a poor excuse, adding that records starting in 2016 are digital, and people rarely need records before that date. Barclay says there are large providers in the state, like University of Washington, who charge much less.
When they issue tens of thousands of pages of patient bills, they charge something reasonable, like $20.
Providers like Dedement, Barclay explains, charge patients about $1 per page of a PDF. She says 1 week of hospital stay could easily create 15,000 pages of records. For KBOO News and the Public News Service, I'm Onyx.
Trump signed an executive order on Tuesday attempting to make it difficult for tens of millions of eligible U.S. citizens to vote. Brett Edkins, Managing Director for Policy and Political Affairs with Stand Up America, said the order, quote, is a blatant effort to usurp state and congressional authority over our elections and stop millions of American citizens from voting, end quote. A key question is whether Trump has the authority to make these restrictions, given that the Constitution gives wide leeway to the states to develop their own election procedures. The order commands the Election Assistance Commission to alter the National Mail Voter Registration Form to require documentary proof of citizenship, such as a passport, to register to vote. It would also force state election authorities, under threat of significant federal funds being withheld, to discard all absentee and mail-in ballots received after Election Day. Oregon Attorney General Dan Rayfield said that, quote, if President Trump or anyone else takes action that threatens the integrity of how we vote in Oregon, we will use all the legal tools we have to defend our state's values and elections, end quote. Oregon Secretary of State Tobias Reed, whose office oversees Oregon elections, said, quote, what worries me is that we should be trying to make it more convenient for people to vote. Oregon is a national leader in voter turnout and was the first state to adopt automatic voter registration.
Trump administration officials texted classified war plans to the editor of The Atlantic by accident. The Atlantic just released the full details in an entire Signal chat, which included a number of senior national security officials and its editor-in-chief. In the chat, Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth provided the exact timing of warplane launches and dropping of bombs before those attacks were made. In fact, it used military language and laid out when the strike window would start, where a target terrorist was located, and when various weapons and aircraft would be used in the strike. Trump's intelligence and defense agencies have struggled to explain how details that would have and should have been classified turned up in an unclassified Signal chat that included Atlantic editor-in-chief Jeffrey Goldberg. The top Republican and Democratic senators of the Armed Services Committee are calling for an investigation into the use of Signal, a messaging app which is publicly available. The chat was also notable for who it excluded, the only military attendee of the Principals Committee, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. Admiral Christopher Grady is currently serving in that position in an acting capacity because Trump fired former Chairman General C.Q. Brown Jr. in February. The Pentagon said it would not comment on the issue, and it was not immediately clear why Grady, currently serving as the president's top military advisor, would not be included in a discussion on military strikes. The Pentagon and Trump administration have tried to deflect criticism by attacking Goldberg and The Atlantic. But the magazine and Goldberg had repeatedly reached out to the White House before and after publication to gain context on the Signal chat and to ensure that publishing the full text would not cause harm. Signal is not approved for carrying classified information, and it appears to be hackable.
TextGate draws congressional scrutiny. Trump policies on campus protests and federal workforce cuts are prompting lawsuits as their impacts on economic stability and weather data become clearer. With more on the story, it's Farah Siddiqui with 2025 Talks.
Welcome to 2025 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
They've acknowledged that they made a mistake, and that's what they're investigating. And they'll get to the bottom of it, and they'll make sure that it never happens again.
House Majority Whip Tom Emmer is deflecting criticism away from a dozen top administration security officials who used a public encrypted text app for sensitive discussions. A journalist was included in the group chat on military action in Yemen by mistake, and one of the officials got the messages while in Moscow. Emmer says the app was used this way previously, but a memo revealed by NPR says the White House specifically forbid its use due to vulnerabilities. A new report by the Center for Community Solutions says federal cuts in Ohio could hurt the state's economy. The center's Dylan Armstrong says if all the job reductions go through, it could spike the state's unemployment by nearly 40%.
For federal fiscal year 2021, almost $58 billion of investments through all the different federal agencies. The state doesn't have the capacity to replace those dollars. No one has the capacity to replace the dollars just of that magnitude.
Appalachian East Ohio gets the most federal funding, but Wright-Patterson Air Force Base employs about 20,000 people. President Donald Trump is signing a sweeping executive order tightening federal election rules. As Congress and the states look at similar provisions, the order will mandate proof of citizenship to register. It will also prohibit counting mail-in ballots received after Election Day. Critics charge the steps are designed to make it harder to vote. Meteorologists are raising alarms over possible staffing cuts at the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, or NOAA, which could lose a fifth of its staff. Data from the agency's National Weather Service is used by millions, including farmers, sailors, and folks who want to know what coat to wear. Bernadette Woods-Plackey with Climate Central says it's an everyday lifesaver.
Because of NOAA data, we know when to evacuate ahead of storms, fires. We know when not to evacuate, which is also really critical because that saves a lot of money and a lot of time.
Boot camps designed to help women become forest and brush firefighters are being canceled. 14 camps are being closed in the White House rollback of diversity, equity, and inclusion programs. Reva Duncan with Grassroots Wildland Firefighters says only about 1 in 6 of the firefighters are women, in part because it's a tough world to get into.
Beyond the actual required training, just having discussions about, well, how do you address hygiene? You know, what do I do if I feel like I'm being treated unfairly? And those kind of questions that don't get covered in a classroom setting.
Otherwise, the administration is rolling back some cuts to wildfire efforts. University professors are suing Trump's administration, accusing it of targeting non-citizen students and staff who protest. Filed in Massachusetts, the case challenges deportation tactics and warns of a chilling effect on campus pro-Palestinian speech. I'm Farah Siddiqui for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to the KABU Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for KABU News in Depth. Jeremiah Hayden from Street Roots will be joining us to discuss his latest piece on the City Council's resolution to investigate Zenith Energy. At 6, it's The Underground, produced by KABU's own Youth Collective. Then at 7, PDX Progressive Talk Radio. Tonight's weather will be rainy, with an overnight low of 53 degrees. There is a severe thunderstorm watch in effect until 9 p.m. Tomorrow's weather will also be wet, with a high of 58. Today in history, in 2024, a container ship crashes into the Francis Scott Key Bridge in Baltimore, causing it to collapse. The quote of the day is from American poet Robert Frost, who was born this day in 1874. He wrote, "Nothing can make injustice just, but mercy."
New Mexico's state legislature passes a bill to create native language schools to address the resource gap they face in learning their native languages. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A bill to create tribal language immersion schools passed in the recent New Mexico legislative session, as Jeanette Didios reports.
New Mexico has 23 sovereign tribes, and among those tribes, 8 languages are spoken, but only 7 are taught in school districts. Senate Bill 13 would create a 5-year pilot program with 5 schools prioritizing distinct native languages of Tewa, Tewa, Toa, Karis, Apache, Zuni, and Diné. Bill co-sponsor Democratic Senator Benny Shendo Jr. from Jemez Pueblo says that many Native parents and grandparents have been conditioned to believe that the only way to succeed was to speak English.
But that's not true. I was born and raised speaking my own language. It wasn't much later that I began to learn English. So how can that be when those of us that were fluent native speakers are able to be successful in college and all the stuff that we're doing today?
He says a lot of native students are struggling because they don't feel that they belong.
And if we can really reground them in who they are, then I think it gives them that confidence for them to be able to go out and compete in the world in a way that they should be competing, not with anxiety about who am I, where do I belong.
Native American students have historically reported lower achievement and graduation rates than their peers. The New Mexico Indian Education Act stresses the importance of maintaining Native languages and culture, but programs providing these opportunities are currently limited within public schools. The bill does not contain an appropriation, but will provide operational and capital outlay funding for immersion schools. For National Native News, I'm Jeanette Didios.
A new study shows intimate partner violence disproportionately impacts Indigenous women more than any other ethnic or racial group in the U.S. Judith Ruiz Branch has more.
The murder rate for Native American women and girls is up to 10 times higher than the national average, according to the U.S. Department of Justice, yet they account for less than 1% of the population. Desiree Todi with the Center Against Sexual and Domestic Abuse is a member of the Red Cliff Band of Lake Superior Chippewa in Wisconsin. She says violence against Native women is underreported and unaddressed.
There's jurisdictional issues that come into play as to how things are investigated, how things are tried, and there's always racism. There's less attention paid to the individuals that some of these things happen to.
The Wisconsin Department of Justice created a task force to combat violence against Native women across the state after legislation that would have addressed these issues failed to pass. Poor tracking and data collection are just some of the many issues that contribute to the epidemic amongst Indigenous women. During a multi-state march last month, Todi read a list of names of Indigenous people from Minnesota who had died from domestic violence. No such list currently exists for Wisconsin, and Todi says she's working on changing that. She emphasizes the great need to address the systems in place that continue to fail Native people.
I have three daughters that I want them to grow up as strong Native women, and I want them to grow up safely as strong Native women. I mean, this is their futures on the line.
Research shows Indigenous women also face significant barriers when seeking help after experiencing domestic violence. A survivor herself, Todi works to provide resources for those affected in Bayfield and Ashland counties. I'm Judith Ruiz Branch reporting.
Tribal flags removed from a Veterans Affairs hospital in Phoenix, Arizona, are now being displayed by the office of Arizona Governor Katie Hobbs. The flags were removed after new rules were issued by the Trump administration on the public display of flags throughout VA facilities. Tribal leaders in the state strongly objected to the removal of the flags by the VA. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Department of Agriculture Secretary Brooke Rollins recently outlined a plan to address high egg prices, including potentially importing them. But experts say that's unlikely to solve the nation's eggy woes. Nadia Ramlagan has more on the story.
The U.S. plans to import 420 million eggs from Turkey in the hope of combating nationwide egg shortages and sky-high prices. But Associate Dean of the School of Public Policy at UC Riverside, Bruce Babcock, says the move would only lower prices by a small percentage. In order to lower egg prices by a significant amount, say 10%, the nation would need to import close to 2 billion eggs, an unlikely scenario.
Other countries don't have that many surplus eggs. And if they did try to export that many eggs to the United States, their egg prices would rise dramatically.
As avian influenza continues to spread, each day resulting in the culling of thousands of chickens, the U.S. government is scrambling to keep costs low for consumers. Relying on imported eggs doesn't escape the avian flu virus spread. So far, the virus has been detected in more than 100 countries. James Mitchell, assistant professor and extension livestock economist at the University of Arkansas, explains eggs aren't easy to transport.
Eggs are a very fragile product. They have to be refrigerated. And so it's a costly product to import. And so if you're relying on imports long term, again, that becomes an expensive source of eggs.
Factory farming has kept eggs cheap for consumers for decades, but at a cost. Over 99% of farmed animals are raised in concentrated animal feeding operations, or CAFOs, notorious breeding grounds for diseases. This story is based on original reporting by Nina B. Al-Khali for Sentient and is part of a collaborative reporting project exploring a just and climate-friendly food system. This is Nadia Ramlagan for West Virginia News Service.
It's challenging for women to break into the wildland firefighting industry, which is largely male, and the U.S. needs more firefighters. 14 training boot camps for women, which have been popular in recent years, were canceled with the Trump administration's DEI cuts. Kathleen Shannon has more from Montana.
Wildland firefighting is a tough job, and the industry has long struggled with worker retention. Training boot camps have helped bring new firefighters, especially women, into the fold in recent years, but federal cuts could threaten that progress. About 84% of federal wildland firefighters are men, according to the U.S. Government Accountability Office. Boot camps targeting women have been popular. Montana saw its first just last year. Reba Duncan with Grassroots Wildland Firefighters worked in fire for over three decades and says the boot camps offered a safe environment to raise concerns.
Beyond the actual required training, just having discussions about, well, how do you address hygiene? You know, what do I do if I feel like I'm being treated unfairly? And those kind of questions that don't get covered in a classroom setting.
Since the boot camps are designed to increase workforce diversity, future programs have been cut under the Trump administration's DEI rollbacks. Following the firing and then rehiring of 6,000 USDA employees since February, including some with firefighting duties, the Interior Department announced permanent pay raises for wildland firefighters in the new federal appropriation budget. The U.S. Forest Service saw a 45% attrition rate of wildland firefighters over the last 3 years. Duncan says the DEI cuts won't help.
We need people who want to do this work. We need the kind of people that value working on the public lands and serving the American taxpayers. And so this has detrimental effects to the overall recruitment and retention strategy to try and get firefighters into these jobs.
14 different scheduled women's boot camps have been canceled. According to the USDA, about 65,000 wildfires burned nearly 9 million acres across the U.S. in 2024. I'm Kathleen Shannon with Big Sky Connection.
Clean energy is powering local economies in the Lone Star State. A University of Texas study found that wind, solar, and battery storage projects are generating billions in tax revenue for communities. Dr. Anthony Lizowitz has more on the story with Climate Connections.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. Across the vast state of Texas, solar and wind farms are making a lot of clean energy and billions of dollars for communities and landowners. In a recent study, Joshua Rhodes of the University of Texas analyzed the amount of local tax revenue generated by existing solar, wind, and battery storage projects in the state. He found that over the lifetime of those projects, they will pay more than $12 billion in taxes to the communities where they're located, some of which do not get much revenue from other industries like oil and gas or manufacturing.
And that money then stays in the local area and funds things like roads and schools and hospital districts and other types of local services that the residents need.
On top of that, landowners who lease property for those clean energy projects are expected to earn about $15 billion in payments over the year.
For a rancher or a landholder to have that revenue. And a lot of landowners talked about wind and solar being like a drought-proof crop. It doesn't have to rain to still get paid.
And there's more money in the pipeline. The study finds that new projects slated to come online in the next couple years could generate tens of billions more for Texas communities and landowners. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.
KBOO news poet Dan Raphael knows it's counterproductive to hate haters, but...
Trump is spewing insults at George Clooney for talking about declining freedom of the press on 60 Minutes, which Trump also hates. Trump hates his portrait in the Colorado State House, a portrait that makes him at least 20 years and 30 pounds younger. I don't have time to list all the countries Trump hates, which is most of the ones he's aware of. He even has a grudge against Bhutan. Bhutan? Trump hates anyone telling him no or you should. He hates people who don't genuflect, grovel, and thank him profusely. You think someone elected twice to one of the most prestigious jobs in the world would have enough confidence to look past any criticism. But this creature is so empty, so unreasonably hungry and hateful, he can never be happy, never seriously do the job much of the world depends upon. You can't run a country on hate. It's corrosive. The American dream is being deflated, deferred, and denied at such a rapid pace it can quickly fester and explode. For Poetic Justice, this is Dan Raphael.
You're listening to KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, March 26th, 2025. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Dan Raphael, Josh Salem, Dave Johnson, and Onyx. The producer is Althea Billings, and our engineer is Ray Bodwell. Special thanks to Farah Siddiqui, Antonia Gonzalez, Kathleen Shannon, Nadia Romlagan, and Dr. Anthony Lizowitz. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. Podcast of the newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Dave Johnson.
And I'm Josh Salem. All of our KBOO programs, including the Evening News, are supported by our members. If you would like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for KBOO News in Depth.